Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters edition. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us shortly. And we have a whole lot to talk about. Obviously, we're going to start with that San Francisco. I can't even talk. I'm flustered. San Francisco 49ers debacle on both sides of the ball. Couldn't run, couldn't get. The offense laid an egg. Defense couldn't stop the run. There's a run differential stat that's pretty embarrassing, historically speaking, that we'll unfortunately have to get into. But, yeah, of course, we're going to start. You know, it's been Saturday. It's been a handful of days. We're going to break down some of this game. We're not going to go possession by possession because there was about 5-3 and outs anyway, so that would have been it'd be a really quick talk anyway. So we're going to break it down a little bit and just, you know, tell you what we saw, the goods and the bads, mostly bad, right? It was ugly. It was ugly. Even though it was 14-10, there was the last couple of years, we've done this podcast for 2 years now, and three of the Bears games, the Packer game earlier this year, or both the games, I should say, there's just times where you're looking at it and you're like, you know, sure, the scoreboard tells us that we're in this game, but it just doesn't feel like it with what you're watching on television. And that's how I felt at 14-10 at half. So we'll get into it. Obviously, we'll give you a little season overview. Did we make some, you know, steps in the right direction this year compared to last year? Yeah, sure. We obviously got to keep those steps going. We'll talk a little bit about needs in the off season, whether that's the draft or free agency. We're not going to have a free agency and draft show right now. Last year we only did a draft show because some of the cuts and the renegotiations and all that, we kind of knew what was going to happen. The only thing was like Barr. We kept Barr back, but it's not like Barr was a free agent as far as a new player coming onto the team. You know what I mean? So we didn't do one. We did a draft one. I'm guessing the amount of people that we get rid of or reduce their salary and bring in, especially to free agency, obviously the draft is until April, late April at that. We'll talk a little bit about that stuff, you know, the needs, the part of the offensive line, part of the defensive line, of course, the secondary. Actually, Aaron and I had a good probably 20-minute back and forth, just talking about this stuff, and it's we still need, you know, more to turn the page. It'll be interesting to see. Co-host brought it up off air here just a second ago. If we're willing to part, Zimmer and Spielman are willing to part with certain guys. Sometimes when you draft guys, sometimes when you develop guys, and you turn them into a star player, you know. Are you willing to get rid of them? And in fact, Zimmer said, you know, that is a difficult thing when asked about that. And you just got to take every player and, you know, judge it straight up, whether it's a young guy still developing or an older guy past his prime. So we'll definitely talk about that. Obviously, with both coordinators gone now, one we kind of knew was going to happen, of course, was Stefanski. Didn't really think about it with Edwards. How big of a deal is that? Sure, he's a solid guy. He's been around for a while, but he's not calling the plays. So it can't be that crazy. So we'll talk about it. Will it be Kubiak, you know, that takes over? Will it be his kid? There's another one that's floating out there as well. We'll get into that, kind of would make sense. So the Pat Shurmur one does not make sense. It makes sense, but he's already taken from the sounds of it. I haven't double back on that report, but it sounds like I saw it in enough places that I believe it's going to happen. He's going to be in there in Denver. But anyway, so yeah, we'll put a bow on the season talk about needs and all that good stuff. I'm going to go ahead. Well, actually, before I do that, real quick though, I almost forgot. My head's kind of all over the place. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, we'd like to appreciate you, you know, listening. the people that have listened, you know, for the last 2 years, and some new ones we caught up this year, or maybe this literally is your first time listening. It can be found on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoveradio. But you don't have to just find it on Blog Talk. We're all across the internet, whether it's, you know, Apple Podcasts, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including iHeartRadio. In fact, if you use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify and TuneIn, you can find both platforms, the Grueling Truth and Rope-A-Dope. And while you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing. It's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu. That's betnow.eu with the promo code TGT. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you did and you're not happy, you just need some sort of cable package. I got something for you. You may want to check. I actually used it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. Okay, they have it's a streaming cable service. They have a 7-day free trial, so you can just try it out. There's no annual contract that you have to sign up for, but the plans start as low as $50 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR as well. It's a growing streaming cable company. So it's not available everywhere. It's available right here in Minnesota for Minneapolis, parts of California, Florida, New York, Texas, the Northwest and Seattle, part of the Midwest with St. Louis and Topeka and Wichita. Basically, just go to the website, put in your area code and see if you can get it. It's called AT&T TV Now Streaming Cable. It's a growing platform, let's put it that way. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Aaron, and we had a nice little discussion off, I was going to say off camera, but off air, and you could tell we're Minnesota Vikings fans, you know what I mean, and we're into this, that's why we do the podcast. We should have recorded some of that, we kind of dropped the ball on that, but you know, every once in a while, we've taken a little bit, just a little bit of heat for calling it living in Loserville. And then the debacle that happened in San Francisco on Saturday happens. But first and foremost, how are you doing, sir? There is a college football game that's pretty good tonight. I'm going to lose my mind to that tonight, along with some other things. But how are you doing on a personal level?
Personal level is fine and dandy. I'm working and it's kind of a pain in the ass at the moment, but, you know, that's life in real life. But back to this, you know, these fresh wounds here ending up the season, you know, wouldn't have been so bad had you not had every possible weakness exposed on a national stage, against the Niners. And so now, you know, we can look at it one of two ways, I guess the one way would be positive way, and that's, you know, well, we had a great season. The negative would be, well, what next? And before we get into that, we're going to break down the game. But, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done, and we've got coaches exiting and people talking about this and that. So there's a lot up in the air, and the wounds are so fresh, and we don't know where a lot of these chips are going to fall because we're so early into post-mortem here on the season. So I guess we're just going to be kind of throwing things at the wall at this point because we're just not really aware of all the cap stuff and all that kind of stuff that's going to go into it. But I've heard so much today on the radio about all these different possibilities and opinions on what should be done. And I guess my only opinion is that something needs to get done. What that is, I guess we'll chop it up and try to figure out the best we can.
Yeah, just like last year, you know, everybody said – locally, media-wise, that we have no cap room. There's no cap room. Jesus Christ, oh, my God, the sky's falling. And then we had enough to put out a $50 million contract. And remember, we actually did it wasn't $10 million a year, but we did offer Sheldon a decent contract. He just got a better one and longer. So this whole cap thing, you know, it is going up. That's the lucky thing. It goes up, you know, from time to time, right? It keeps going up slowly but surely. But in every year, it's a little different how it goes up. So it went up. And you're right. We're going to find out. We do have some cap casualties that we'll talk about for sure, because they're going to happen. And, you know, it's we're in some ways we're right there. I think we've said that probably eight times. There are eight different games we could probably point to. And we're probably going to have to do that at Seattle again somehow, some way. We're at Seattle again. That's a different show, different topic. I don't want to go down that way because I'm going to get mad again, having to play Seattle at Seattle again for some crazy reason. But I actually just went down that path, didn't I? So yeah, there is a lot to discuss. But as far as this game, it did feel a lot like the first Bears game, both Bears games last year, both the games this year with the pack attack. You know, from time to time these last 2 years where you're just like, I understand what the scoreboard is telling me, but when you look at what's before you, it's trouble. It's trouble. So we'll break down a little bit of this and get our feelings of how it was at half. But I really think that the way you said every breakdown, the weakness exposed of everything that can be exposed offensively and defense was just perfect. It really was. And that's exactly what happened. I think we had four or at least three four and outs in the first half. A couple of short runs, a couple of pressures throwing the ball away. They came out, and it's funny, if you look at their game plan, they came out kind of quick passing, short passing early on that first drive, and then they got that play-action play with that bootleg that looked – I mean, obviously, the systems are close to each other, so we're very familiar when that's working. And it's very scary when you see a guy sit back there for a couple seconds. You're like, oh, boy, he's got a lot of time on this one. And zip, you know, they just basically made it look easy early on, and I thought, okay, well, you know, scripted plays, and you know, it is what it is. It was a nice drive. I don't want that was too easy, but sometimes you see that, especially in the NFL these days, the scripted plays, whatever. You know what I mean? They go across, they go away from their tendencies or whatever. You know what I mean? They didn't try actually to establish the shit out of the run on the first drive, but after that, it was basically all run. But as far as the Vikings go, there was a couple of tight end screen passes that either didn't go anywhere or they could even barely get the ball out to even get the fucking play going. And I got to give credit to the Niners as far as them taking away most of our screen game, not just with our running backs, but the tight ends too. A couple of those tricky tight end ones where it's kind of the opposite, everything's going that way and you dump it off there, that's worked this season. Here and there, and I like that we tried that, but it really didn't matter. But anyway, we did put together a nice drive. What was it? 7 plays, 79, 4 minutes. Much like the drive they had, we hit. We got like a four. I think it was 4 or 6 our biggest run. We had a decent run on that drive. I remember that. We hit Diggsy on that 41-yard play. He stood up, he was able to stay on his feet, which I thought was probably the best part of it. You're like, okay, we got 1-on-1, and they said on 3rd and short, that's when they, you know, we heard a little bit about this during the week, but even in the broadcast, they said when it's 3rd and short, that's when it's 1-on-1, for the wide receivers. And we took advantage of it, so that's great and all, you know what I mean? Straight, so 7-7, okay, nice little response. And then they brought out some of that zone rushing that we know here dually, right? The Gophers and the Vikes. And just the run in general, they started having some success. And even a play where it was 3rd down and 10, and you're thinking, all right, dude, it's 3rd and long. Let's get off the field. And Hunter hit frickin' Jimmy. And it wobbled, and it looked like it went to a different receiver, and it was like, okay, it's going to be that type of day, it seems like. But we did manage to, you know, Hunter, we started getting some pressure early in the game, and I did like some of the things I saw out of the defense for a couple possessions, getting to the quarterback, sacking, forcing a second and 19, that type of thing. And obviously Hendricks almost getting a pick before later he did get a pick that our offense, you know, did not cash in on. But when it's third and 10 and third and 12, you can't allow them to pick up first downs like that. And we did that a couple of times. We weren't really offensively able to get our play action going because we couldn't get our run going. And even when we tried the play action, it was like, oh God, either take the sack or get rid of it. It was ugly. There was a play where Xavier stripped the ball, but the elbow was down, or no, the knee was down. That would have been another big play early that the defense made. I'll give them some credit. At least they showed up in moments of the game until they didn't. But there was that moment where on that they did that little trick reverse play, and Jimmy was out freaking blocking, and he put Barr on his butt. I was like, oh, dude, this is not looking good. But, you know, you're looking at it at about halftime. We didn't cash in on that Kendricks. You know, we got a field goal. Great. That's the minimum you should get there. You need to get a touchdown, especially the way they were playing. So you're looking at halftime, and I just kind of wanted to go long with it, and I'm going to let you go long with it because, like you said, we're not going to freaking go too deep more on this game in the second half and all that, like, you know, too deep because it was ugly and it pretty much was one-sided at that point. But when you look at the halftime statistics, you knew we were in trouble, Aaron. You're looking at this and you're like, okay, they have 6 rushing first downs. We have 0. That's not a good measurement right there. Time of possession, well, we know what that's going to turn into. They had 63 yards rushing. We had 14. The passing for both of them, it was kind of a mix and match. Sure, you could look at Cousins and go, well, you know, he had 80 yards, but 40 of them was on that one play. So there wasn't much there. A lot of it was just checkdowns. And same with Jimmy. Beyond that first drive, he didn't do much either, besides throw that bad pick. So at halftime, seeing what you had seen, and also really that maybe midway through the first quarter and on, how they really started getting that run going, what were your thoughts just in the first half? And then at half, sure, it's 14-10, but to me, it still felt like one of those games where you're like, it might as well be 20-0 right now, because I'm not feeling good in the second half.
That's about what I was thinking as well. You couldn't run, and you couldn't stop the run. And, you know, Chris, in the last 2 years, this has kind of been the way we lose games, right? We can't stop the run. We give up 6 yards on first down. And we've talked about this over and over again as kind of a symptom of us losing games. And we can't protect the quarterback, and we can't run the football. Those are the recipes for us losing, whether it's the Bears, the Packers, now the Niners. In fact, we're so sure of that recipe that we just know that that's how we'll lose to the Bears twice a year. And that's just, it can't be that way anymore. And it was just exposed again. And we have problems with our fronts, for teams that have adequate or good, opposing fronts. We're not quite at the high level with those things. And that's what I was seeing. I mean, Kendricks made a great interception. I thought maybe that would turn the game, but then we go down, we can't run the football, and we settle for a field goal. That was a big game changer. And, you know, set the tone for the way the game was going to go. And, you know, going into the half, you're thinking, okay, well, it's still a game. It's 14-10. A lot can happen. Make some adjustments. Maybe find a way to run the football. And, you know, that's what I was thinking going into the half, come out in the second half. I mean, it just was more of the same except for a little bit more of the run. And, you know, 3 and out doesn't help your defense. And if you keep doing 3 and outs, how much can you expect from those guys? Now, I thought they played pretty well in the first half. And, you know, even giving up 28 points at the end of the game to a pretty explosive offense is still a pretty good defensive performance. Although inside of that performance, there was a lot to maybe criticize. But once I see 7-yard run on first down or 6-yard run on first down or 4-yard run followed by a 4-yard run, you know what kind of game it's going to be. And this is really the team that I said, or that I kind of saw A lot of teams will let up on it, but these guys didn't, man. They just kept running it down our throats, and kudos to them. I mean, that's what you should do, and they didn't have to throw the ball much in the second half, and they didn't.
Yeah, that's really well said, and that it was kind of it was a team effort of shitty play. I'll give some credit for the defense because they did cause some turnovers. They almost caused another one. They almost caused two. That Xavier and then freaking, you know, Kendricks almost got a second pick earlier in the game and whatnot. But, you know, I guess we can relate to this year and even 2 years ago that when you got a team down and you know they can't stop the run, well, what else are you going to do? It makes no sense not to do anything. And when you start to line it up, 47 rushes to 10. I mean, wow, dude, this isn't a triple option team. They ran it on that scoring play where they scored a touchdown. 7 or 8 straight plays. Remember, they didn't even throw the ball. I think it was 13. I think they hit either 12 or 13 plays in a row, you know, off that first drive, off that drive I just mentioned. And then they ran like 5 or 6 more straight runs after that and actually got a field goal, I believe, on that drive, if I remember correctly. And that's a horrible sign. Because you can't – if they run every play, you got to force them on third down to do something near the goal line at that point. Because it's like, all right, dude, you might as well sell out for the run then. Because you can't just let them walk in like that. But like I said, we're used to being in the situation like that at times this year and doing the exact same thing. That's what you do. That was wonderful. But if you look at this, just to put it in reference – the 185 to 21, 9 carries, 18 yards for Cook. But 185 to 21 run differential is the third worst margin in playoff history. That's before the merger to playoff history. That's really fucking bad. And you're not going to win a game like that unless somehow, well, even the turnovers, how can you create, I mean, I guess, you know, stripping the ball at that point. Yeah, sure. But other than that, they're not going to put the thing in the air, so you're not going to get turnovers, more than likely. You know what I mean? So in the first half, I am right there with you as far as if you have three and outs, that's going to be tough for the defense. But after that, it's like, well, dude, once they get into run mode, you gotta force them because Jimmy didn't actually play that well. 11 and 19, he threw some questionable passes. You know, that was his first playoff game, and we weren't able to put the ball in his hands and see how that would have worked. It was just ugly. As far as more recap, ugly, ugly, ugly. There's not much more to say.
No, there really isn't.
If you look at it, the scary thing is if they can get that much pressure, and that's another thing we see in these games that we're talking about, Green Bay and Chicago – they're not blitzing a bunch of dudes. You know what I mean? This is 4-man pressure, and they drop 7. And think about it. Think about it. Now, let's get to Cousins first of all. There's about 3 or 4 plays that he either – well, the one by the goal line to Diggs, he missed the play. He missed the play. Even if the worst that could happen there is Diggs – somehow gets tackled at the one. I like our chances at first and goal at the one. If you look at this year and how that went, I really like our chances. So he screwed up that play. And then I thought Sage Rosenthal does a good job on Twitter to get those clips out really quick the next day or the, you know, 2 days later or whatever. And he I think it was about 3 plays where there could have been a 15-yard pass or whatever, a completion that was there, but you could see at that time Cousins is already like, okay, I got to get rid of the ball. If you get to a guy enough where you're getting your first progression, you get to your second when you're getting hit, he's probably going to check it down. And there, I think there was 3 separate checkdowns that somebody was open. But he started feeling those footsteps. He's like, well, I just want to get a completion. I don't want to have to hold it and lose yardage or get, you know, or throw it away and not get any yards. I'm going to try to dump it for 4 yards. And obviously in the moment, that is on Cousins. But, you know, if you don't protect the quarterback, that kind of lingers into that. But as far as Cousins goes, the interception, we'll talk about the interception too. I forgot to mention that in the notes. Clearly, you know, when you look at these interceptions, you try to break down, okay, what happened on the play? Well, clearly, what's-his-toes, Thielen settled in and made himself a target. And clearly, Cousins didn't think he was going to do that. He thought he was going to run. Now, a lot of times we don't know what happened. Sometimes they're honest. Thielen did say that I was supposed to keep running, but I could also see why he'd settle in, you know, because you're like, okay, is it miscommunication? But by the end zone, that I'd say that would be a touchdown that Cousins missed. But like I said, at worst, it's first and goal because he's catching that ball. It's one-on-one. And Cousins even admitted he put him too far to the damn to the sidelines. You know, where he threw the ball was not going to be able to complete. But as far as the other stuff, when you have four guys rushing and seven drop, that's tough, right? But also, you have two wide, and I thought that Sage and Lieber made a good point about this today. When you have two wide receivers running routes and they're seven deep, and four rushing and they're getting pressure, where exactly does the ball go besides a lot of checkdowns at that point? So that's not a good look if they're getting that much pressure on four. And there's only about maybe five lines that can do this to us because, like you pointed out, it's actually the defensive line that's great. The defense doesn't necessarily have to be the second best because we took on a couple of these fucking defenses that were in the top five and in the top ten, and we did our thing against them because they didn't have that line play. There is a couple of these lines that are just, you could see it from a mile away. I thought that was key, not to have to get that pressure. And then, like you mentioned, the third and long. If you're third and long in the playoffs because you have shitty on one and, you know, first and second down, and that works for both offense and defense, like you said, too, defensively. If you're giving up 7 yards, it's going to be a long afternoon. And you're like, oh, sweet. You know, so on third and one, they give us a one-on-one on the outside. Okay, but how do we get to third and one? I think that's basically what I saw. They didn't do a whole lot of blitzing, which is something that we're going to kind of address that left side when we talk about free agency and, you know, needs or whatever. We're not going to talk about free agency, but we're going to talk about needs or whatever. But I'd like you to, you know, get any other thoughts when it comes to this game and then kind of give like a season overview as we get into, all right, what are the needs here?
Well, I mean, we pretty much outlined the problems in that game. I mean, you can't run the ball. You're going four rushers, and you can't run the ball on that. You've got issues with the offensive line. If you can't either scheme or offensive line, you know, that's what it's got to be. And we know what it is. We know it's the offensive line that was ignored for three seasons. Patchwork. Maybe threw something at it last year, hoping that we'd get by. But, you know, these are fundamentals of football. And then, of course, the defensive line, ours aging a little bit. Theirs young. All first rounders and fresh coming at what has been a porous offensive line. You're not going to, I mean, you can get there with four when it's like that. And if you can't run to keep them out of it, then what are you going to do? You're not going to get to third and short, which is what our whole game plan was based on, was getting to third and short. And if you don't want to throw quick passes or do anything like that to try to, you know, run to, or pass to run, you're kind of caught in that situation. Defensively, they just wore you down running the football. There's not much more you can do, you know, to stop them. If you're going to give up those runs on first and second down, just like you said, it's going to be a long-ass day. And that's exactly what happened, man. And we had it coming. I mean, we've been going with smoke and mirrors for so long, it's about time that somebody made us take a good hard look in the mirror at exactly what is wrong with this football team. And I think the Niners, you know, they did that to us. And now, you know, we got to move on. And for as far as the season goes, I mean, like I said, it was a good year. We won 10 games, 11 with the playoff win, went down and beat Drew Brees. But yeah, we didn't beat anybody that was really good. We waned at the end of the season. We did beat the Saints at their place, so that's a good team that we beat. We've had Cousins questions all season. We've got some aging players. We've seen, you know, the best and the worst of some of them, particularly Rhodes and Reef, which we'll talk about later. So, You know, I guess it was what it was for a season. I don't know what more to say about it. It was a playoff season. I guess overall there's a lot of teams in the league that would like to be a sixth seed and win 10 games that aren't doing it at the moment. But with what we've got and the talent that we do have and the money that we're paying, you know, I think we do expect a little bit more than that, plus just the long Super Bowl drought that the city's gone through. We are a little bit hungry to see a little bit more than that. And we're told that the Welts are willing to pay and do whatever they got to do to get a Super Bowl here. And, I mean, that's the line that we're fed, the purple Kool-Aid, so to speak. And at some point, man, I mean, we're really starting – the chickens are coming home to roost, I think, really now more than anything else in those years that we were begging for the offensive line. I think the problems on the defensive line, just to switch gears for a second, it's really not the players. Maybe it's just age and Linval's getting a little long in the tooth, still playing well, but – I think he's coming down the other side of the mountain on that one. And
injuries piling up on him sure. A little bit, right?
Yeah. Everson also still quick, but I mean, we know what his issues are and actually, you know, tackling. And he can pressure. He can get a lot of pressure, but actually getting sacks and tackling. He had a good season this year, so I'm not going to dump on him too much, but we know that he's coming down the other side of the plateau as well. And so the needs are, I think, we kind of outlined a little bit off air. I mean, we definitely need to shore up this offensive line and pay a good offseason's worth of attention directly to that, I think, is what needs to be done. And we need to pay some money, which means we need to free up cap space and all that other stuff. But, I mean, I don't want to see Reef on this team next year. And Elfline's a whole different story. We've talked a little bit. You'd like to see him maybe as some sort of Band-Aid thing and maybe keep him around because he's on his last year of his contract, so it would be relatively cheap. But we need to see more of, I think, Drew Samia. I thought he played well in places where we could see him play. But that was a small sample size, so we don't want to go ahead and hitch our wagon to that. I thought Klein played well, and we got two, probably three decent linemen. O'Neal. Klein, I thought, played well, and then the rookie Bradbury seemed to hold up pretty good. The other two we need to deal with, and then we need to deal with the defensive line and the secondary.
Yeah, let's not go too far. Let's stay with offense first. Let's go off right there. I'm with you there. O'Neal took a jump I didn't think he actually was capable of in his second year, per se, based off, you know, I mean, how many times did he even start last year? Not that many, right? I mean, he really didn't. He was a little hurt. How many we started?
I think he had three or four at the end of the season.
At the end of the year, right? Yeah, he started playing more at the end of the year. So we didn't really know. We thought, hey, there's going to be an improvement. How big, we don't know. I thought he took a sizable jump, and I think he's going to be good to go now. I think he's very much good to go there. So that was a pleasant surprise. Obviously, Bradbury playing the whole year, the ups and downs as a rookie, especially at center. He'll get stronger, so the bull rush hopefully won't affect him as much. But he'd always bounce back. So there's two young guys ready to go, and they're not going to get worse. You know what I mean? Are we going to sit there and judge how, this guy's going to be this in 2 years? I don't know where these guys are going to end up, but we know they're going to get better, right? And like you said, it seems like we're good on the middle. In the right and left guard. Now, Zach Elfline? Did I just say that?
Pat.
What's his first name? Pat. Thank you.
Pat Elfline. Now, I don't, like I told you off air, I'm not exactly sure how, is it circumstance with him, or is he just inadequate at the guard position, and would he be better as being the backup center? He didn't play, I mean, he didn't play well at center, but I don't think he played as bad as he's played at guard. At the center position. And I don't know where to stand him. Like I said, if you're going to stick around for a year because it's the last year of his contract and we owe, $1 million or something, that's doable. But he just, like you said, you watch him all season and he's just grabbing for air, and I don't know what it is exactly with him. He could just not be very good. That might be it. But he was injured. Remember, he had a good rookie season and an injured season, or coming off an injury last year. And then they moved him a spot. And so I guess,
he's supposed to be more comfortable with that.
Yeah, and so I guess the proof's in the pudding. If he's not playing well, he's not playing well. We need to do something about it. But I want to get to Reef a little bit here. Now, we got Reef, what, 2-3 seasons ago? And I don't, you know, he's serviceable. I mean, maybe we just switch the tackles. Maybe we move O'Neal over to the other side and Reef over to the other side. I don't know what to do about that because, you know, we're just so closely removed from the season. But, you know, we've got to make some changes. I think there's going to probably be some draft picks involved, maybe some free agency. I mean, there's not a lot of depth besides Samia. I don't want to see Rashad Hill back again. He's not the answer. You know,
right. He's just a guy that could be on your team. You know, that's about it.
Yeah. So I mean, we got tackle problems and a guard problem, and then depth always. I mean, we're trying to find five guys who can line up. I mean, we still don't have adequate depth line positions. So we need to work on that and spend a lot of resources to get on that. And it's something that we've been talking about for three seasons, and they throw us a little bone in the draft, and we go, okay, we're going to be fine. Maybe something in the low-tier free agency, and we think, okay, well, this is going to help. But I think we need to pay, like, first-round, second-round attention, maybe some high-priced free agency attention to that to just get it to a point where, you know, Cousins is the kind of guy where he needs a line. I mean, he needs the time. He's a guy that needs the time.
He's not franchise.
He's not escaping shit.
He's not franchise.
He hears you and he's ducking under. So, I mean, he needs to know that he's protected for whatever, how many reads he needs to get through. We've learned that about him in two seasons. And, you know, on the fair side of that, when he has had time, he throws dimes out there and plays good games. So, we need to make sure that happens for him offensively. And we've got to give up a Diggs and a trade to do that. If we've got to give up, you know, maybe even a Cook, you know, to get that. I think that's important because Cook's no good without an offensive line. You know, you can't use him. We learned that Saturday. So we need to have that shored up quickly.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And, you know, really quick, relating it to a Gopher football, just so people can see what we're saying, and we talked about this too. You know, we had the top two receivers in the Big Ten. But when it came to Iowa and when it came to Wisconsin, they didn't have the top two guys. We did. But what happened? The line wasn't able to pull their weight all the way up. Not the whole year, just those matchups. So the point taken very well. Now we've seen constant pressure on Cousins. Yeah, that's an issue. Escapability is not there. And just in general, it's an issue. I mean, constant pressure on any quarterback can be an issue. But there is some escapability things right there that it really can be. But if you do protect him, like you said, then when there is some pressure, that's different. One thing we've seen is he can take a hit to deliver the ball. But if you keep doing that to him, what we've seen, and you see this with other quarterbacks, maybe not the top tier, but, you know, the most quarterbacks out there, that they will start to be like, all right, check down. All right, this. All right, dude, last time I held it too long. Oh, shit, I got to do that. So you're right. I mean, we can have the skill positions. People keep saying we have the talent, yeah, on the outside. But, you know, you got a lot has to go. That's why wide receivers are such drama queens. Because think about having all that talent, Aaron. Think about having all the vertical, the hands, the speed. I can make the coolest looking play on the planet. But you know what? I need fucking 10 other dudes to do their job to get me the ball. You know what I mean? That's why they're so, you know, drama. There's drama because they're like, what the fuck, dude? I can change this whole game. Give me the ball. Well, we got to get you the ball. And that's the problem, too. So, yeah, I mean, now, obviously, just throwing cash.
Well, I'm glad you brought it back to.
Go ahead. Let's stay offensive lineman, though, because I do add a couple more points. Go ahead.
Well, throwing it back to what you said about the Gophers. I mean, basically, you lined it up pretty well when you said meat and potatoes. I mean, that's what we thought the Gophers, specifically on their defensive line, really needed some help. Their offensive line is young, but they got, you know, it's going to grow into be a pretty nice offensive line here probably this coming season. And
yeah.
And you can't do anything if you can't, which we did learn in the Iowa game. I mean, you may have Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, yeah, Stephon Diggs, but if you can't protect your quarterback and you can't form holes for these guys to get through, I mean, it's worthless, and I think this game Saturday probably taught us that more than any other, although we have been saying it for the last two seasons. And, you know, to go along that Gopher line thing is, you know, that's why you got to go recruit. And I know you want to stay on the offensive line, but I mean, the defensive line's a whole different thing, and we're going to get to that in a second here.
Well, and what I was saying, one thing we've learned in the last chunk of years, Boone and a couple of these guys, the guy we just cut last year, going out and just throwing money at offensive line is not always the best thing to do, as we know. I mean, we got a guy on the left side right now that's going to make, what, 12 or 13 next year. That's what we got him on the cap. So I think that, you know, have we put some effort into the line? Oh, yeah. I mean, look at our three. We got a second guy. What did we get him? The second round, O'Neal. Got him in the first round. And we got Klein in the offseason. So I'm not saying, well, let's just throw money at a tackle no matter what, because we've seen two out of the three times we've done that, it hasn't actually worked that well. So, but let's still get it. I'm not saying don't get it. You know, if we're paying him 13, let's save four for the cap and then give 8 or 10 to this another tackle that fits the system. The fits in free agency, in draft, of course, too, but especially in free agency, you can bring him in. You know what he's done. He has tape. It's not just college tape. It's tape. And if we can get a guy similar to Klein where it's more affordable but it's a system fit, it's not, well, this guy can play anything. He's a stud tackle. I got news for you. Those stud tackles that can do anything, they're not fucking coming free. All the guys we want, do we keep the guys we want? Yep, we sure do, don't we? We do every time almost. And Barr made it to free agency, but we still kept him. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of this, let's just chuck money, and I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm saying I'm hearing that. It's like, well, we've done that, actually. And Boone was gone after his first year. You know, and so there is something to be said about it. I want one of the guard positions or the guard or the left side, I would prefer a vet somewhere in there. You don't want to go in a rookie tackle. God dang, that's rough because we got the talent now. We got the outside talent now. Do we want to wait 2 or 3 years? And how high can we get up in the draft to get a tackle that could come in and even do what Bradbury did? Well, that's interesting. You know, maybe we will move up and get a stud and we can start that guy. You know, maybe. But, yeah, I think the combination of veterans bringing him in as free agents or – like you said, draft, is definitely needed on that side. And you also put up a great point, and we found that at the beginning of the season. We're like, so who is our tackles if these two go down? And you start to go, oh, shit, we really don't have them. You know, I mean, no one's experienced, you know, besides the guy you mentioned who was just a stopgap or whatever. So as far as Zach, though, yeah, Riley gone. Zach, keep him. It makes no sense to cut a guy that's going to be somewhere in the millions is what I read. For a year when we know he can run block, we just, like you said, catch, you know, grasping for air. Anytime a guy's just looking around like, oh, and the quarterback's on the ground or the running back's on the ground and they lost yards, a lot of times it was good old Pat. So I say keep him, but only because he makes less than $2 million, I believe, next year. I'm not going to say a million. I think it's 1 point something, but it's really not a whole lot of money when you're looking at a $200 million cap. So I'd say keep him. Riley, gone. Any other offensive stuff as far as we'll get into extensions with Cook and Cousy in a second, but any other offensive line stuff that you want or offensive issues in general, or should we get to corners in the defensive line?
Well, just an overarching kind of a scheme question is, you know, if you go to this zone running scheme where you need these quick, smaller offensive linemen, and then you go up against a team like the Bears, like the Niners with the big, strong, physical, defensive line, I mean, that's where you run into problems with the zone scheme. I mean, you're outsized on the line, which can cause a problem. And I feel like those are the teams that have been bothering us, just the big, strong, heavy lines, where we don't got enough weight on us to deal with them. And And that's the drawback of the zone scheme. And I feel like, you know, some teams can do it successfully, but you got to find unique linemen who are big and able to do that. And yeah, Elflein's a little small, and you know, Bradbury's, we drafted him as opposed to that other kid because of his quickness. And you know, maybe we got to look a little bit at that scheme as far as some of the failure we have of blocking some of these defensive lines and maybe put that into the equation. Maybe that zone running scheme, you know, lends itself to getting pressure on the quarterback because you just don't have the weight to hold up against those big linemen.
Yeah, and I mean, Niners are the same system. You're right. They had success against the Packers majorly. We'll see, though, the second time around. If that is the case, and if that that one dude can make all that noise, that's a good point. And I mean, I suppose to overview that, you can find, you know, issues with all schemes. Just a matter of can they take advantage of it or not. You know what I mean? Like, it's a good point. I mean, Bradbury's going to get stronger. He's not going to get that much bigger. Well, he's not going to grow, and we know that, right? He's not going to grow 3 inches, but it's not even that. Like you said, it's weight. So he's going to get stronger, but – can he find a strength slash technique to deal with that bull rush? That's a good point, man. That is a good point. And also, you know, like, you got to stick with the system for a chunk of years to really see it through, right? So, you know, I guess you stick with what you got and go for it and just try to improve that system. But, yeah, you're right. That might be something that keeps coming up. That's a really good point. So yeah, left guard, left tackle. As far as cornerback, before we get to the defensive line, cornerback is going to be, you know, really big. Obviously, Rhodes, I was willing to give him a pass the year before because of legitimate, not nicks and bruises, you know, full-on hamstrings and, like, real, real injuries that can affect you majorly. This year, he even admitted he's not hurt. It's not that. You know what I mean? So, but once you see it again and it's not the injuries, then you go, okay, I'm going to reassess that. And, yes, he makes way too much money to be on the squad. And if we're going to rotate him, he's got to take about a fourth of his salary if he's going to be a rotational player. Sure, he could play better in that role, but like we mentioned off air, okay, so we do that next year. But in 2 or 3 years, do you still want to be rotating corners? The answer is no. We both know that. No, you don't. Now, when you lose your – let's say, okay, we don't sign help me out, Michigan State cornerback.
Trey Waynes.
Thank you. So we don't sign Waynes, and we cut Xavier. Now, I understand people that want to do that, you know, but I guess I'd rather give Waynes, if we can give him just a good solid – he's a good to sometimes very good corner. If we can find him a contract that's good to very good, I'd gladly keep him. But what I don't, but I'm a little afraid of, no matter what we think of 1 and 2, like we said off air, it's still pretty daunting to lose 1 and 2. You'd have to bring in a vet on one of those corners. And I did look at the list. We're not going to go over it, but it does seem like we could bring in a vet and that we like the potential with Hughes and company. But right now it's potential. None of them have even played a full year, consistently as a starter, not just a nickel or a specialist or a band-aid stopgap. And it's pretty daunting to have Hughes and Boyd and guys like that being your starting. Those are the top three, and then you add depth. No, for me, we got to bring in a vet. The best thing would be to do is cut Xavier because of the contract. He's just not living up to it right now. That's the NFL. It is what it is. He was great for us for years. He's not that any longer. Whatever it is, whether it's a mental, whether it's his legs are shot, which a lot of local media think, it could be a combination of that, whatever. We can't have him, unless he's going to take like a super hometown deal and he just wants to be a Viking, which I think Griff may do. No, I don't want him on the squad. I don't want him on the squad on that. So Then I say fill him in with a vet, because you gotta. Then you have two starting vets if we did, you know, bring back Waynes. Now I'm a lot more comfortable, and of course, you know we're gonna draft corners anyway. This is Zimmer, you know what I mean? We're gonna draft corners anyway. That I'm a little bit more comfortable in that, but it is a little daunting, dude, to drop your one and two and not know what's gonna be in there.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean. That's why I think if you lose Xavier, you've got to give that money to Waynes. I don't want to lose the one and two. Now, let's say, worst case scenario, we do lose the one and two because maybe Waynes just doesn't want to play here. That's a possibility. Then you got to start looking at high draft pick and high free agency, because Zimmer's not going to live with, you know, subpar corners. I think he had enough problem with that this year, and he, you know, it's going to it takes him to train his corners. Let's say he gets a rookie in here. It takes a good year to 2 years for him to really get his stamp on those corners. It took him a while with Xavier, took him a while with Waynes, took him a while with Hughes. So it's going to be a lot of touch and go in the cornerback position. You know, you do have some depth. You got Alton Hill. I think if he, like you said, get his act together, could be a good player. I would hate to see losing one and two. I mean, other than that, we're pretty much in agreement and the whole mess that is the secondary right now. Do need some depth in the draft. And hopefully, if you're going to lose Rhodes, hopefully you can keep Waynes. But if it comes down to, you know, losing Waynes and keeping Rhodes, I'm not for that. I want Rhodes not on this squad. And, I don't want to deal with the hometown discounts. We can't keep bringing back these guys at low rates, taking up roster spots we could use for other players to get them better. I mean, it's just the Minnesota way, and I understand that there's loyalty, but this is the NFL, baby, not for long, and you got to be able to move on from players. I mean, I think that's what Belichick shows. A lot of other teams show that when you start to get to the top of your prime, you get going to a different team, and you start to fill that with some new players under, and I think we need to do that in the secondary. So if it comes down to losing Rhodes and Waynes just to get rid of Rhodes, I think that I would be down with that, although I would like to keep Waynes if that is a possibility, simply for continuity. He's not the best corner in the world, but sure. He knows the system. He's comfortable in it. He could become a one just until your draft one or your other guy comes in. And remember back earlier where we were talking about maybe we should trade for Ramsey? Well, you know, now imagine if we had. You know, if we had done that, no, that wouldn't have been cheap. We might have given up a first and a player, but
we got a young player though. Yeah,
but we knew we had a young player and a star corner at that, and it might have helped us in the old playoffs as well. So, yeah, I mean, what it could have should as far as that's concerned, but I think we're pretty much in agreement on the corners. I'd like to see at least one of them stay, but you know, it's really starting to look like we might lose both one and two.
And secondary wise, obviously, get Harris back on the squad. That's going to be something we'll need to do. I do like what you said about the Patriots not for long. The only thing about the Patriots where, not that I disagree, but I'll add on to the league is what they do is they don't overpay players. That's what they do. They don't overplay players. I mean, you can't say they overpay Brady because – well, it's a quarterback position, and it's Brady, so you can't. That's impossible to overpay Brady, right? It's impossible. But they move on from guys because they want too much money. That's what they do more than moving, because they bring in veterans and find a home for them. They'll have three or four tailbacks sometimes, but they sure find a home for them at a discounted price. So I'm with you on the. I like the mentality with even when you said the Wilfs are willing to spend where we know the Polads, they've had some issues on that. I do like Ziggy as far as putting it out there. He will put it out there. He don't care about certain things. The only difference is as far as like let's say Xavier keeping around on a discount. Maybe that's not a good I say Griff. Griff keeping him on a discount. The only reason why I'm in favor of that is because unlike those other leagues, the NFL has a cap. So we can say, yeah, that's true. I agree with what you're saying to an extent about the roster spot and how it could be a young developmental development player. Sure, I agree with that. That is a good point. But there's a cap, and it's a hard cap. It's not like any other cap in any other sport. They can go over and pay the luxury tax. No one can go over on this. So if you could give me Griff and he could produce what he produced this year for $8 million less or $6 million less, I'm going to do that. Now, Xavier, yeah, I think I spoke out of turn as far as the hometown. I don't think it's realistic anyway. I think what you said about him wanting to be a starter plays into that too. You know, why bring him back on a rotational? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, moving to Griff, I mean, I think you have his replacement already coming up through your system. I kind of stand with you on that. If we can get him cheap to dirt cheap, yeah, man, why wouldn't you bring him back and take what he can get? But, you know, you'd like to see Odenigbo get those reps, though. I mean, I think he's the guy that's going to be the step in there with Hunter on the other end. And so, you know, at what point do you have to say, okay, Griff, we know you want to stay here and you're willing to take less, but are you willing to play a third of your downs that you played this season? Are you willing to take a back seat, you know, kind of like Robinson did? Are you willing to be that guy for a season or two? If he's willing to do that at a cheap rate, sure. You know, but we saw at the end of Robinson, you know, Robinson had to go by a cut. And some of these guys, man, I don't know if, you know, we get attached to these players, and I think that happens on every squad, but sure. I think it's to a point now where it's like, thank God sort of that Cousins came and took all the cap money, you know, facetiously saying that, because now we have to make some pretty tough decisions on players that we might not have to make them. How do we value Waynes, for example? What about Cook when we talk about that? What about, you know, guys that are coming up on contract? Our linebackers are set. We've got them both signed, and we're pretty happy with their performance. But, you know, we've got a lot of depth guys on the defensive line. We need to see who's worth it and who's not. Cut through that. You know, where's Linval at? So let's talk about that a little bit. You know, I don't know where he's at contract-wise, but where's he at player-wise?
I think he's going to have to clean up. Yeah, player-wise, I think the injuries are starting to pile up. He's a big man. And when big men get hurt, even in, like, the NBA or whatever, when they fall the fuck off, they fall off. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, he's not the same player. So I'm a little – I wouldn't doubt if they come to him to clean up some of the cap, to say, all right, dude, we still feel like, you know, maybe we had something better next to you, you know, the last couple of years. This year maybe not as much, whatever. That plays into it. We can't just put it on him. But – he was banged up, and especially random stuff, Aaron. Like, oh, this week, yeah, he's hurt. He's done. He's not going to play this. Well, what? What? We didn't even know he was hurt. What's going on? What did he do? You know, like, is that arthritis? You know what I mean? It starts to get a little weird there. Just to add on what you said about Griff, my thing is I don't think he has to actually reduce a third. I agree at defensive end. But remember, his first couple years, remember, he played on the inside on third downs. That's what they saw potential on him. Well, I say put him on third downs on inside, and then we can use the young buck and keep him in position and let him get, because you made a great point, you got to get the reps too, and you can't be taking away a bunch of reps from a guy that is showing this potential. So I guess my idea is putting me on the inside more. And then maybe it's so stupid to talk about this whole half of his play.
Well, no, it really isn't, because that's exactly what we did to Robinson. Remember, he moved back into the inside his last season or so.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the percentage of plays. That's what I'm talking about. But I don't know if it's a, like you said, a third or whatever the fuck that number falls under. But I think if Griff stays, would he be willing? Because, you know, he's saying a lot. He wants to be a Viking. Okay, cool. Meaning you're going to. He know that's code for I got to take a pay cut. You know what I mean? We heard it last year, too, and he did. But, yeah, I think if you move him inside now, I want him on the squad for sure. Because if he can reduce his pay, give us what he did on the edge like he did this year, and move him on the inside, now all of a sudden I go, okay, let's keep him on the squad for a couple years, see what happens.
And that opens up, I mean, this is going to be a very interesting draft. I don't want to go ahead, but – I mean, you got some serious needs. Interior defensive line, Chris. I mean, if this is one of the seasons, and I'm going to say this quickly and we're going to move out of draft talk, but if this is one of those years where Spielman does his crap about moving back, we can't be moving back this year. We need quality players, quality depth at the spots that you're going. In fact, this is a year you want to move up, and you want to keep move up as much as you can. I don't want 27 seventh-round picks this year. We got serious needs on the offensive, defensive line, and then the secondary. We need to have those picks. Now, to the interior defensive line, let's say you take Linval and you cut him back, and who we need to have a big lineman in there. We don't have anybody in that at that point right now on the roster. We need somebody in there to do that. And we've got like Jalen Holmes. He's a good, you know, three technique, but we don't have any, you know, Jerry Ball, Linval, Joseph type of big run stuffer if we're going to deal with Linval. I mean, he's probably got a couple good seasons left, but he can play first and second down. But I think this year they kind of rotated on third down, throwing in some of the young kids on the interior, which was good to see, but I don't think any of them really shined all that much. I mean, maybe the kid out of Iowa, I forgot what his name was, Jamar. No, I forgot his name. And then the Jalen Holmes kid made a couple flash plays with fumble recoveries, but you didn't see him coming in for sacks or getting much pressure. So I think we need to look at the interior of the defensive line as well as a place where we need to look in free agency in the draft and try to shore that up to make up for Linval's age and lack of depth at that position.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, on all a variety of what you just said, but especially the draft. Let's get back to moving, getting two first-round picks. You know, let's get back to moving up. Okay, take our first and then sneak in to the second, or sneak up in the second and get someone there. You know what I mean? You're right. I mean, for years we did that really well. And then once we started getting good, once you're good, a lot of times, you know, the cap starts to be an issue and you start to think, okay, well, what are we going to do here? We need this, that, third. Yeah, let's move up. Let's try to get three picks in the top 50 or something like that. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's a good point. Let's not keep moving back. But, you know, I think it's a lot easier to find a role player big man in the middle than a big man in the middle, 100% full time. You know what I mean? So I think it's possible to either bring in a vet or a draft or both. You know, maybe we would draft someone that's a third or fourth round at that if you brought a veteran in. And some of this stuff that we're talking about, we'll have a better idea once the first month of free agency's done, because then you go, okay, we got that shirt up veteran-wise. Now let's go with depth. So, and just based off what we're talking about, all these decisions, we're going to have a free agency show. We're definitely going to have a free agency show. We're not going to have to wait until next, or late April to have our first show like we did last, you know, just a draft show. And then we talked a little bit about free agency, but we didn't do a whole lot. Not a ton of people got cut. We kept Barr. We thought we were going to make a run at Barr. We kept him, you know, that type of thing. And Klein was one of those guys that turned out to be really good, but it didn't make any kind of splash. You know what I mean? And that's, I think that's when you're a good team, you generally don't have a lot of cap room. So I think we're going to have to do that instead of making this big splash, not in the draft. I prefer a splash in the draft, but, you know, free agency wise, it'll be interesting. So yeah, for those who, you know, have been staying with the show pretty routinely, we'll have a free agency within probably 10 days of the kicker off. You know, that's the funny thing. Once the Super Bowl's done, it's like, all right, early March comes and it's free agency. You know, it kind of jumps right in maybe 3 weeks after the season. So I'd say within a couple of weeks, we're going to have one of those, and then we'll have a draft show too. Let's get to some coaches here, sir. We lost both of our coordinators. You could tell, you know, the leaps we made offensively, you could kind of felt like, okay, you know, and plus he was, you know, Stefanski had already, you know, gotten an interview last year. So we knew he was going to be on, you know, probably leaving here soon, if not this year, for sure next year. But also the guy's been a Vikings coach in some form or fashion. You know, he started low, started from the bottom, obviously, which a lot of coaches do. But since 2006, Aaron, that's fucking crazy that he's been here since 2006. So it's really no surprise. A lot of people like him. He's learned from a variety of folks. So that's, you know, good on him. See you later, Stefanski. Thanks for the 1 year. It does suck to You know, I'd like to get a coordinator. And then just to go down that road, Edwards left too. He's been here for 6 years. He doesn't call the plays. He may be very good at the game plan during the week. He may coach him up in practice, which I assume he'd have to have this talent of a defense. And not all of them were first rounders. A lot of our defensive players weren't first rounders, if you look at it. Maybe on the outside, the corners, and we did dip in to get Harrison. But a lot of these guys weren't first round top 10 picks. So he's done a good job. No hacking Edwards. But like I said, I think we can get a guy like him, and he's not playing the call, you know, calling the play. So, I mean, I think we're okay there, but I wonder where we're going to go next. I'd really like to have a guy that's going to be here 2 or 3 years just to be able to fucking have some, you know, some shit together. You come back to camp, you want to add, like, you know, in the off season, you work out, you do your workouts, that's great. The mini camps. I want to install new plays, you know what I mean? I don't want to have to go over terminology and all that shit. And that shit does add up. And Zimmer today made it clear that he's not changing. We're in this system. We're not going to make the mistake of changing systems again. I learned from that. We're going to stick with this system. And my guess is he's going to want a guy that gives him at least 2 years. You know, and I think Kubiak, he said he doesn't want to be a head coach. I think that's clear. He wants time with his family. He's already done it for so fucking long. A coordinator in the pros is actually a better job to spend time with your family than even a coordinator in college. Because remember, a coordinator in college still has to hit the road to recruit. The recruiting process is a couple of months, you know, you go to a pro day. You go, you know, you work, you fly a guy up here and you show up to the office and watch him work out and interview him. There's not, it's not the constant thing. So Kubiak also, no one's going to be looking for him for head coach because he's made it clear that he doesn't want to be it. Now, it doesn't mean in 2 years if we, you know, go to the Super Bowl and we got this 30-point offense, doesn't mean someone wouldn't throw money at him. I'm not saying that. But the next couple of years, I like the Zimmer approach of let's stick with this system because, remember, last year we brought in a passing system out of nowhere and dude got freaking canned, and now he went to Jacksonville and he got canned again. Now, he may turn out to be a great coach, but I don't want to just go the opposite way either. So I'm thinking either Kubiak or Clint Kubiak is kids, so Kubiak's still here, but then the kid can develop, hopefully, the next couple of years, so he's not just jumping off into the draft. Or an outside name that I saw today, Jay Gruden, for a year or two. And that would make a ton of sense, too. What are your thoughts about losing Stefanski? And just, hey, dude, we built this. What we have for parts makes sense. Let's try to keep it in-house or try to have someone here longer than a freaking year.
Well, I'm a little concerned about, you know, kind of the departure. There's a lot of coaches leaving at once, and they all seem to be following Stefanski to Cleveland. Those are the rumors. Edwards, Jerry Gray, the defensive backs coach, all kind of leaving, kind of split. Looks like there's a split in the – in the coaching staff there. They get three guys exiting. I think there might be a little bit more, too. Maybe front office guy, too, that's also might go with Stefanski to Cleveland. So there's a pretty hard split of coaches that just kind of left and makes me wonder what's going on with the whole regime if you're going to, you know, split pretty much down the middle and off they go. So, you know, and we could be less in a position here where it's like, we've got a lot of nepotism here, man. I mean, you could have Adam Zimmer as the defensive coordinator and Clint Kubiak as the offensive coordinator. What does that say? I think Gary Kubiak's a co-head coach title-wise. And so then you got to deal with that. So, you know, is that going to become another country club like the Timberwolves were back in the day? And how does that really look optically? You know, there's a lot going on, but there's a fairly good chance that that could happen. Now, Gruden would be a good name, I think. And there's a lot of other coaches out there that need to be looked at, I think, before you decide to settle in on two of your kids taking those positions, especially after you lost a couple really good coaches in Gray and Edwards and Stefanski. But I think I do agree the fact that you need to keep the continuity. These guys have gone through a lot of coordinators, a lot of verbiage, a lot of change, and that's nice. I'm not a big fan of the zone running system, as I laid out earlier. But it, you know, Cook seems to run it well, and that's what they've been running, so I think you just stick with it. You know,
it looked pretty good against us.
Yes, it did. And so, you know, besides the fact that I'm wondering why the exodus, you know, it might be good to shake things up a little bit and get some change in there. It's kind of been a very, you know, besides the coordinator change on offensively, it's been, those guys have been together for quite a while, and maybe it's good to shake it up on the coaching staff a little bit, give Zimmer a new maybe feel around the office and what's going on. Maybe some new energy would be a good thing. But, yeah, I don't really have much to say because it's so early. You don't know where a lot of these guys are going to land, and we just know they're not going to be here. And so that's, you know, I got some questions about, you know, who might fill in defensively, because it's a weird job because you're not going to be calling plays. You're basically going to be what, like an assistant to Mike Zimmer, which I guess is the job.
Or is that going to change? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I don't see him changing. Yeah. I think he tried.
Maybe he will. Maybe that's the whole thing. Why wouldn't Edwards stay here then? That's the whole thing.
Right.
Edwards surprised to stay here. And he was up. He's up for a – his contract expired. So it's not like he just left. We chose not to even offer him.
Yeah, but so, why? You know.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't know if it's an exodus because we didn't even offer him. You know what I mean? So,
but I mean, if all these guys end up in Cleveland,
or, you know, right? But I mean, Stefanski left because he's been the head coach.
Not for sure.
Right. Because he left as the head coach. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no argument there. I'm just saying that if they all end up in Cleveland, that's going to look a little bit weird, you know, that they all kind of took off with Stefanski now, or at least ended up. Ended up with Stefanski in Cleveland, because we, you know, there's multiple reasons why they might have left, and nobody really knows. And it's so close to the end of the season that we don't really know where a lot of these chips are going to fall. But I just found it odd that like, you pretty much lose four coaches with an offensive coordinator. It doesn't look great, and then your replacements are possibly the sons of the two head coaches at the time. I don't know what's going on, but we're gonna find out. And let's talk a little bit about Spielman now. If there's anyone that I would like to see maybe replaced, and I don't even know if that's true, because I mean, he's a little bit of good and a little bit of bad. I think maybe he's part of the reason why we hang on to guys a little bit longer. I like him. He seems like a good guy and all that. He seems to do a good job. I mean, there's a couple things he hasn't been able to draft, offensive linemen, and we guess he got a couple. But I think he kind of fell ass backwards into O'Neal. I guess you can say that, but, you know, I guess he did draft them, so it's not falling into it. But in quarterbacks, he hasn't really drafted any quarterbacks, but he managed to sign one that he thought would work. And so it's hard to know, you know.
It's a good trade. Wheel and deal when we needed. He did that well when Teddy went down. I'll give him that to get Bradford. He didn't pull the trigger on Ramsey, which would have cost us, you know, picks. But hey, like you said, at least, you know, we'd know when we get there.
We've got that uncanny skill. Sorry, I'm grabbing something. But he's got that uncanny skill to collect seventh round picks. I mean, no one does it like him. So, you know, I don't know. I think he does good in the undrafted free agent market. You know, but
had a good draft this last year, that's for sure.
Had a good draft last year. Besides the coaches leaving, do you feel like we got to break it up a little bit more? I mean, would you be opposed to a change at GM at all? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is if it happens, I wouldn't be surprised and I wouldn't be shocked and I wouldn't hate it. But if it didn't happen, I don't think I'd be upset about that either.
Well, I think any change, if you can bring in someone as good pedigree or, you know, it's hard to say better, especially if it's their first shot at being a, you know, a GM or something like that. It's really hard, but the pedigree has to be there then. As far as, well, I was chilling, like kind of like the guy that may go, like you said, to the Browns. Well, he's been chilling. And to be honest with you, when a head coach takes over, there's a good it happens more in college, obviously, but there is a chance that there are some coaches that come with him where he's from. So that doesn't really surprise me, but any kind of change, who you bringing in. We could talk about Cousins, we could talk about Spielman, all that. My thing with Spielman is he's not going anywhere, and we know Zimmer's not either, because before the season was done, before the Saints game, They said that they have 1 year on their deal, they're gonna be here. And then they went out and won the Saints game. So to me, I think they're here. Plus, you know, draft-wise, you're right, quarterback, no. But other than that, he's done pretty damn good in the draft. You know, so yeah, I don't think Spielman's going anywhere based off the owner who'd be making those decisions saying he's not going to go anywhere. But so I'd be surprised if he left. I think
well, that could be the dreaded kiss of death, you know.
I didn't hear that.
Well, that could be the dreaded kiss of death, you know. We always hear that coming out of, you know, we have no plans to change, blah, blah, blah. And then 2 days later, the guy's fired. Or not 2 days, but, you know, a month or so. The guy
yeah,
you fired.
But it came out of the dreaded kiss of death. Yeah, but it came out of pressure on Zimmer and Spielman, and they came out and said, I mean, it's not coming off a 7-9 year. And then the pressure came from that. They were the only reason why the pressure came is because they said they both got 1 year left on your deal. What are you going to do with them? And they came out and said, this is what we're doing. We're bringing them back next year. So you're right on the kiss of death. Even a coach saying, you know, at the presser, no, I don't have any plans on leaving Auburn. And then the next night, you know, they're at fucking 6 in the morning, they dip on a plane and nobody saw him. You know what I mean? You're like, hey, wait a sec. He was just in the locker room telling us he's here. That's more of a college thing. But same with the pros. It can happen. So, yeah, you're right. I just would be surprised because it didn't come after a shitty season. And they came out and said, we're happy with what we got. They said they're coming back. So I believe, based off Ziggy.
Right. On the flip side of that, I would be annoyed to see Zimmer gone. I don't know why. I mean, I know. I think he's a good coach. I think we're used to him. But, you know, he's been – this will be going in on his 7th or 8th season here. And, you know, I think that would be a little bit harder to take than losing Spielman. Although, you know, maybe you got a bright young coach coming in. I don't know. I mean, I just – gotten used to Zimmer. He seems to be a good thing. One thing I am getting a little annoyed with, though, is this whole we got good guys. You know, you don't get caught in that loop again where you got all these great guys and nobody can make a play. You know, we don't want to get into that. And it's starting to feel like that a little bit, like, oh – they're leaning on that a little bit more about how we got great guys in the locker room and all this stuff. Well, maybe you need a hothead. Maybe you need somebody to put a little bit of energy in the room instead of – and I'm not saying go get a bunch of hoodlums or anything like that or guys we know that like Tyreek Hill or something, although that would add some definite offensive spark. But, you know
– that would be some speed down the field, wouldn't it?
Right. But I don't want to end up, you know, like that. We're the good guy team and we lose every season. I don't know. We just got to – you know, it's this – we're caught in that upper middle tier of teams
yeah.
where we get the low draft pick and the – you know, we got to find some way to get through that. And, you know, I know I mentioned to you earlier about blowing it up, and I kind of – what I meant was just maybe like retooling and taking it apart like we're doing now. Like I think this is a good thing for us to do so close to the end of the season before we get washed over with all the propaganda that's going to come in the next 2 months, and then we end up with the same damn team next year because everybody's – you know, giving in to, oh, well, they're a good player, they took a pay cut, or they did all this stuff. We got the same damn team we suited up this year with a couple different parts, you know what I mean? And that's how it will work. But we get this down now that not that our words are going to matter, but we'll be able to go back and look, this is what we needed. How far did we get when we get to that free agency show? Be a little bit more sure about what it is that we want to see get done as opposed to, like I said, the next 2 months of being worn down with the same propaganda that comes out, and we got a bunch of good guys and old guys now that's, you know, retiring here on an umbrella contract. And when we, you know, draft, you know, the nicest kid on the board instead of the best player.
He's a good American is what the thing is. And, he pays his taxes on time. No, you're right. Even the training camp propaganda. You know, that you get, you're like, all right, dude, so everybody can fucking play the NFL on this team right now, huh? Okay, great, you know? Yeah, I hear you, dude.
And it just seems to be that loop that's coming around again, and you got to have something to break that up, and I certainly hope they find something. I mean, think about, like you said, you look, what corners are out there? Just briefly, you said you looked over the list. I haven't seen a list. Give me, like, two names that sound intriguing.
I looked, like, 2 weeks ago. I don't know them right offhand. I could look it up, but it takes a little bit more detail than looking up because you got to see what they made last year, what they did, what the market is. You know, that's why I don't want to really go through lists and stuff like that. But
sure.
There's veterans out there.
Yeah, I mean, but are they got to be over 6'1"? You know, got to You got to fit the Zimmer mold. I mean, yeah, it's got to be a whole thing, you know. So I don't know, man. Maybe we draft Winfield and play him at the nickel spot or something. I don't know, but it's going to be a really interesting offseason. I think because of what we saw on Saturday, how well highlighted those deficiencies were, and I just am going to be very stubborn about not getting worn down in the offseason about, you know, this guy's taking less or this guy, you know, I'm going to be very, very staunch on the fact that some changes need to be made. For example, Reef and Griff and Rhodes. Now, we both agreed on Griff maybe, you know, taking a pay cut and being a serviceable player, but he can't be taking reps, I think, from a different player. Lindvall, same deal with him. But Rhodes and Reef, I want to see what happens with them. I think it'll tell a lot about the status of this franchise and what they really want to do moving forward.
Yeah, those are the two pieces I think that will be very telling. That is a good point. And we should have led with, can we draft Antoine Winfield Jr.? That's what we should have led with. And remember how we thought a good humbling might be good to go in with some positives? Sure, the Gophers squad hasn't been, the program, you know, hasn't been that good, obviously. It's been pretty mediocre, couple of bright spots, but we're talking 9 wins and all that type of stuff. But remember we were talking about it might be good to get humbled going into the offseason. Well, you know, this may have been really good to see, like you mentioned, and you put so well, that though every weakness that we have, because every team has weaknesses, but ours got exploited each and individually, every one of them, in our last game of the season. So that may actually be damn good. Sure, you had 11 wins. Oh, this is great, but let's get humbled and let's get fucking real. So, yeah. There was one more I forgot what as far as the old, you know, old boys club, I mean, it definitely can't be a handshake deal, the Kevin McHale thing. Oh my god. But as far as the old, you know, whether it's your son or somebody you develop, a lot of the NFL is like that, unfortunately, where you're like, he's been around for 5 years, so we're moving him up, almost like a son, you know what I mean? So that will be interesting to see how they do it. I'd be a lot more comfortable with Clint because he's been other places and he's learned not just from his pops. That gives me a little bit. And like you said, Kubiak's his dad's right here. Whereas signing somebody else like that, you know, like even Zimmer's kid. Well, you could make the argument, well, Zimmer's calling the place. Yeah, I hear you, but I'm not in. I know we could find a better DC than him. Well, I shouldn't say I know because I don't. But that's where you go, man, if you double up, the Clint one makes a little bit more sense because of his pedigree. But that is a good point, man. Sometimes you get stuck into not just sons, but they can be like sons. Where you're just like, well, he was under you, okay, but there's no other coach out there, you know? And Jay Gruden would be awesome, too. I think it'd be a really good, because then you got another head coach in here, and it's really, when you can get head coaches or former head coaches, I mean, it makes the head coach's job a tad bit easier. Anything else, sir? Because it's
long as hell. We've gone long as hell. But
which is awesome.
I think it's awesome because I really think that, like I said, and that, just to bring it up again, we needed to, you know, just put a stake in the ground and go, okay, this is where we are right now. And then we can play off that in the future about what we thought at this point and then going into next season, you know, what got done, what didn't, what we thought, what we remembered. And, you know, because they come with that storm starting this week. About, you know, how everything's going to get better and how we don't need to change that much. And we do need to change an awful lot. And if they come with that this year about how we're so close and we don't need to change that much, you know, then we got some problems with the way this organization's going.
There we go. And just so everybody knows, the Living in Loserville podcast, the reason why we say the Purple People Eaters edition, it's a Vikings podcast. However, Viking season, unfortunately, over. We will check back sometime in free agency in March, and late April, early May after the draft, right? Well, so those will be the shows for Vikings purposes. But the Living in Loserville podcast turns into a show about the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Gophers basketball. Now, obviously, the just so you guys know, that's what we're doing for the rest of the until the Timberwolves are done. And what's crazy about the Timberwolves, they had that great start. Wiggins is playing a hell of a lot better last year. But when push comes to shove, I think it's the 12th or 13th game now that Cat has been out. And we can't be a good team without him. And there's just no way around it. So the crazy thing is we're still – that A spot is going to be between like 3 to 5 teams. And injuries and head-to-head matchups and all that will probably play itself out. But when you're only had we beaten Memphis, we would have been in the A spot. Or, you know, that type of thing. We're only a game and a half, 2 games out. So it's – the playoffs are doable. We need Towns back majorly. Gopher-wise, 3-3 for the most part, played pretty damn good at Michigan State, and they kind of just wore us down the last 10 minutes and beat them. But they bounced back against Michigan, and I'll tell you what, Carr and Oturo are really putting it together, dude. Carr just was the first he had 12 assists against Michigan. It's the most in a Big Ten game for a Gopher since Ariel McDonald against Iowa in 1994. Also, local kid here, Lawrence McKenzie in 2007, had 20 and 10. But that assist rate with points hadn't been done since Ariel McDonald, which I totally remember that player, 1994 for the Gophers. But like I said, Oturo, will he go this year to the pros? Maybe. He needs to get way stronger to be a pro for 10 years. But other than that, the guy is developing greatly, and that was a great win. So you're sitting at 3-3. You have 12 Big Ten games. We said a couple of weeks ago if they can go 5-5 through 10, and I know that sounds weird, but go look at their schedule and come back to me. They're going to end up probably with the top 10 hardest schedule in the country. Right now it's sitting at the 5th hardest. You know, that plays out throughout the season too, so I'm not going to put an exact, you know, number on it or nothing like that, but it looks better than it is. Had they beaten Purdue, they might be a ranked team right now if you look at how it all shakes out. That net rating really skews towards quality of opponent, and we have a ton of those. So the Gophers have talent. Izzo even said it, hey, dude, like, I like this squad. They just got to develop. We have talent. If somehow we can keep it glued together and get some of these wins, like that Purdue game should have had it. Carr's going to learn from that. You know, that type of thing. I like the squad, though, in general. And let's say Arturo comes back for his junior year because he wants to get stronger, wants to develop that outside shot even more, wants to develop the post moves that we're already seeing more of. We bring back the whole squad that's playing right now, all of them, and we bring in 2 top 100 players in coming in. So I like what we got going on Gophers-wise.
I agree. And that two-man game with Oturo and Carr really showed up against Michigan. You know, Michigan's a little bit down just because of the coaching change, but yeah, they still played well at home. It's so tough to win on the road in the Big Ten this year. I don't think that many people have done it. And, you know, if you can keep winning your home games, maybe steal one on the road somewhere and then show out in the Big Ten tournament – you know, you get to work on your seed a little better. I think they're a tournament team if they can continue to just win their share of games because their schedule is so darn tough that it'd be hard as long as they don't swoon or there's no injuries, knock on wood, going further. I think it's going to be a heck of a year, and I think they will make the tournament. And they've been tested by some good clubs, so they could have a nice little run in the tournament depending on their draw. But, yeah, I mean, they're playing well. Oturu, you know, you want to see at least one more year here, but I mean, if he's going to be a top 6, top 5 pick, I mean, geez, it's hard to tell him not to go grab the bag because, I mean, there's a lot of money in that fucking bag. So, yeah. You know, it's very, very hard to tell
someone. I'll get stronger in the pros. Bye. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And then you got Mashburn, like you said, coming in next year. He's not as big as Oturo. But yeah, if you can manage to hold on to Oturo into next season, and I know we're supposed to be breaking down this season, but I mean, you got Peyton Willis, that two-man game with Carr and Oturu with the third coming out with Kelscher hitting threes. I mean, that's dangerous stuff, especially come tournament time. Kelscher gets hot in any game during the current tournament. You're going to do well. You got to find another big that's next to Oturu would be nice. Demir's a transfer senior, so next year's not even a question. But if he can get a little tougher and rebound a little bit better this year, even be a little bit tougher on defense, you'll have that big next to him. That's where the Eric Curry loss is just huge. But
yeah.
You know, what's done is done. But, yeah, I like the way the squad looks. It looks like it's panning up to be a tournament team. And, you know, that's what we just want to see, is the tournament every season, the chip chair and a chance. And they seem like they're going to do it this year. They're really kind of developing, you know, as the year goes on. Now, we're not quite in that late, you know, maybe mid-February type of feel where we can get a good idea of what they look like when they're doing their thing. But so far, so good. I'm really enjoying watching them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, every year there's a couple of squads you go, they got 17 wins. What are they doing in the tournament? And then you look at who they play and go, oh, yeah, they got 17 wins out of it. That's not that bad. And they played good down the stretch. And so that's what it is. And so you hit it right on the nose as far as the Big Ten road teams not winning. Dude, the Michigan State just got their ass whooped on the road at Purdue. The shit is tough on the road. So like you said, just a couple of wins on the road. And we could be a tourney team, and then you can, you know, I mean, I really like this squad moving forward. I really like what we got. We got a lot of length. We got some long arms. Okay, we won't go into Zimmer cornerback mode. But anyway, yeah, let's shut this puppy down. We'll be back. And the basketball is not at every single solitary Monday show because of how the schedule works out. Generally, the Gophers play twice a week. Once in a while, there's only a once a week. But you want to at least get 2 to 3 games in there potentially, whereas the Wolves, we know they can play 3 games in a week. They can play 4 or 5 sometimes. So it's not a guarantee it's every Monday. But just to let you know, it's not necessarily that exact schedule every single time. You don't know, because there could be something that we talk about and then it happens again. It's like just to come back and say, hey, we can't do that again. It doesn't really line up. Let's see another game or two from both squads and then come back and give you some new content. So we'll be back. The Living Loserville podcast turns into the Timberwolves and the Gophers. All right, you guys, well, enjoy the basketball season. Let's do some, you know, some work in the free agency. And like I said, we'll have a free agency show sometime in March and a late April draft show. We'll be out of here. We'll be back probably – well, we'll be back next week for sure. You guys enjoy the week and enjoy the national championship game that's going on as we speak. Peace.